Welcome to the podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. Our podcast weaves together the message and a taste of the music that we experience each Sunday morning as we root our lives in grace through worship here at The Table. More and more people are finding their way to The Table through this podcast, so if you are one of the many, many folks who tune in each week from other parts of California, other parts of our country, or even from other places in the world, we would invite you to take a next step in growing in faith here at The Table. You can do that online at our website, thetableumc.org. There you'll find links to social media and also a way to make a deep commitment to our community to express how you hope to root your life in grace, to grow in faith, to reach in love, and to give generously. If you're one of the many people listening to this but haven't quite walked through the door of the sanctuary yet on a Sunday morning, we would love to welcome you into the beauty of this sanctuary. We gather each Sunday for worship at 9:30 and at 11. Our address is 5265 H Street in East Sacramento.
We're gonna live so. God, can He use us anywhere, Lord? Anytime. We're gonna live so. God can use us anywhere, Lord, anytime.
We're gonna work so God can use us anywhere, Lord, anytime. We're gonna work so God can use us anywhere, Lord, anytime. We're gonna pray so God can use us anywhere, Lord,
anytime.
We're gonna pray so God can use us anywhere.
I'm going to do a reading from the Gospel of Matthew, 10th chapter, the 40th verse to the 42nd verse. Here it begins. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteousness. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. Amen.
Fear runs deep, spreading like a virus. Hate is cheap. From afar it costs you nothing. Sister, take my hand. Brother, we will stand. Open up your heart and find love is turning over tables, breaking off chains. When I see you in the stranger, I'm no longer a slave. Turning over tables, tearing down walls, building up the bridges between us all.
Eight years ago, July 1st, Pastor Linda and I were officially appointed here by the bishop of our region. The bishop at our time, or at that time, was Bishop Warner Brown. And we were appointed here to work together to plant a new community of faith in East Sacramento. The historic community in this building, this beautiful facility, Central United Methodist Church, had dwindled down in number to just a handful of people. But their faith and their hope remained strong and steadfast. They weren't sure if they were going to make it as a community of faith, to be honest. But they were still confident that God had something big in store for this little place. And Pastor Linda spent most of her first year simply getting to know the historic members who'd been involved in this church community. She spent time learning about the ways that they had watched over one another in love, and this had become their church home. And while Pastor Linda was working on that, We were working together on the side to dream about rethinking church and to start something new that we were imagining calling the table at the time. And one of the ways that we started off was Sarah and myself, this was right before Eleanor was born, we would go each Sunday in the summer and fall to visit some other churches to kind of help us see what are some of the dynamic ways out there people are trying to connect in relevant ways with folks around us. And the very first Sunday that we went out, it was the first Sunday in July, it was myself and Sarah and a young guy named David, and we went to visit one of these churches, and it was traumatizing. To be fair, it was 4th of July weekend. It's a notoriously hard Sunday in churches because everybody's gone. It's also notoriously hard because whether consciously or not, pastors and communities of faith have to figure out how are we going to tease apart or tie together our sense of faith and our sense of national identity and patriotism. And what about these things go together? And what about these things need a lot more critical reflection? Well, the pastor at the church that we visited spoke over and over about how he was a Bible-believing pastor and their church was a Bible-believing church. But worship felt to me a whole lot more like we were setting our heart on patriotism than on God, and we had a little bit of room for Jesus left over on the side. The screens were huge in this sanctuary, and the flag was everywhere in them. We sang together, God Bless America. And I don't know if we really said the Pledge of Allegiance, but in my mind, we said the Pledge of Allegiance. And it was a moment. And this memory came back to me as we started working together on this worship series on faith and film back in the spring. And we started to wonder together about some of the films that we might lift up. See, we had spent 6 weeks together back in the fall, as many of you were with us at that time, and we were working together on what does it mean to claim Jesus as the Christ. And then we came out of that into Easter, and we rose strong with Brené Brown, and we worked together on, like, what does it mean to actually enter vulnerably into our stories? And then from there, we spent some time with Richard Rohr wondering about Trinity as divine dance, and we recognized just how hot it can be in this sanctuary in the summer with no air conditioning, and we decided we've done some really hard work together. And we wondered, what if we tried to change pace just a little bit? And we've been following a church down in Hollywood. It's called Hollywood United Methodist Church for a number of years. And not surprisingly, each summer, they do an entire summer around films at Hollywood UMC. Kind of makes sense, right? We appreciated this format that they'd used. And so we've pieced together our own version of a series on faith and films. And so each week, our hope is that we're going to look together at these big screen stories to wonder a little bit about what they might help us see in our own Christian story. And similarly, we're hoping that we can look to our tradition and to Scripture to also see these films just a little bit differently as well. We have a number of films lined up. We have a couple that are animated kids movies. We have one that hasn't even come out yet, so we're hoping it's going to be good, but we're not quite sure. We have one that's like number one at the box office, and this morning we're going to turn to 42. In an interview on Faith and Film, the director of Pixar, his name is Pete Docter, he was asked, what is the relationship between faith and stories? And this is how he replied. Stories get to that connection that we all share between each other, between ourselves and our family, and between us and the Creator. I think Christianity as a religion recognizes the importance of that connection between people, he says. At the heart of it, there's still some mystery that only God knows. That is what stories can touch. When you have a really good story, it's reaching for that unknown. That is what art does. It takes something beyond words, something that you can talk around but can't quite grab onto with words. And then it speaks about that elusive nature of what it means to be human. we hope that the films that we've chosen will speak to us of that elusive nature of what it means to be human and what it means to be in relationship with the divine. This morning, as our nation prepares to remember the story of independence, we've chosen a film that challenges us both in the sense that we're choosing a sport that has come to be known as our national pastime, and it also challenges us to look at the deep roots of our nation's original sin. That's the way we've decided we need to work together this week. 42 tells the story of Jackie Robinson becoming the first African-American to play Major League Baseball. It actually turns out, in preparing for this, I learned about two African-American brothers who preceded him by a number of decades, who played for 6 months in the majors before Jackie Robinson did. But it doesn't take away from his story at all. It just gives us a little bit of perspective into it. Jackie Robinson was recruited by a man named Branch Rickey. He was the team executive of the Brooklyn Dodgers. He made his minor league debut in 1946, and then he took the field with the Brooklyn Dodgers the following year in 47. And Christian references run throughout the film 42. Here's a scene that's early on in the movie in which Branch Rickey, the executive for the Brooklyn Dodgers, and his team of executives are talking together about who they should sign as the first African-American to play Major League Baseball. So let's watch.
He's a troublemaker. Oh, he argues with umpires. A quick temper is his reputation.
Well, what was he court-martialed for?
Wouldn't sit in the back of a military bus. Fort Hood, Texas. Driver asked him to move back. MPs had to take him off.
Well, yeah, you see?
I see he resents segregation. If he were white, he'd call that spirit. Robinson's a Methodist. I'm a Methodist. God's a Methodist. You can't go wrong. Find him. Bring him here.
References to faith in Hollywood in such overt ways often just fall short, but 42 is different. It's different in a number of ways. The film invites us to reflect on faith and social change through the lens of one baseball player, Jackie Robinson. Branch Rickey, who's played in the scene we just saw by Harrison Ford, quotes scripture throughout this for justifying why he chose to make the move that he did in signing Jackie Robinson to the Dodgers, though he's also clear that it's good for his long-term business. During their first meeting, Branch Rickey talks to Jackie Robinson about how he needs him to respond, how he wants him to respond in the face of the racism that he is inevitably going to find every day he suits up for the Dodgers. And he wants to make sure that he's not going to fight back, even if he's provoked, because he's going to be held to an impossible double standard. That any time he responds, whatever he does, it's always going to be his fault, not the other person that started it. And Robinson is not passive, to be clear. He is strong. He is strong, and he also has a quiet way, at least as he's depicted in the film. He chooses various forms of resistance. One of my favorite is the way he just plays with the pitchers and with the catchers as he's on the base paths. In the Christian tradition, we have this whole image of what we call the trickster. It runs throughout the Hebrew Bible, and it's a way that when you're not going to take on the powers that be directly, you take them on slant. And that's what Robinson does. He is a trickster, and you see it over and over. At one moment, Jackie Robinson says, "You want a player," he says this to Branch Rickey, "you want a player who doesn't have the guts to fight back." And Rickey replies, "No, I want a player who's got the guts not to fight back." The dialogue draws explicitly on Jesus' call to turn the other cheek, and again, not as passive compliance, but as a trickster way of resisting in the face of oppression and domination. So the global church this morning is reading the story that Chris shared with us. I want to share it one more time. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me. Whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me, says Jesus. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water
to one of these little ones in the name of the disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. Biblical scholars call this movement that we witness here a triad. You see, it starts with the prophet, and then it moves to the righteous person, and then it moves to the little ones. And this is a common literary device that Jesus and the biblical authors are drawing upon. And it should go like this, right? I mean, think about it. Move back into this biblical world. Those who welcome the prophets, and those who welcome the righteous. So the third one should be like the wise ones in my mind. Maybe the elders. The Sunday school teacher that's been at this for more decades than most of us have been alive. That's who fits with a prophet and the righteous person. Not for Jesus, though. Jesus turns this all upside down in one single line. Instead of the elder or the wise one, Jesus says, welcomes the least of these, the little one among us, gives a cup of water to this child. So, just before this, Jesus is promising. He's promising that those who lose their life for his sake will find it. In other words, the reward for risking your life for the sake of Jesus and the gospel is this. You get to welcome prophets and welcome the righteous and welcome little ones among us. And Jesus, in this very move, puts little ones, children, ones who are marginalized in his day, on equal footing with the prophet and the righteous. They are all in this together. Another way of saying all means all. The life of this child matters just as much. This turns things upside down. And I've come this week, as we've worked on this film together, to see 42 as an evocative meditation on what it means to lose our lives for Jesus by welcoming prophets and the righteous, and little ones with a cup of water. Prophets in the biblical world were people who listened so closely to God that they knew what God needed them to do. That's how we talk about it in Godly Play with our kids. They listen so closely to God that they know what God needs them to do. And almost always, that means resist the systems as they are. And prophets are always met with resistance because they call us to find and create the world that God needs that we can't yet see. Jackie Robinson was certainly a prophet. And it seems to me that Branch Rickey may have been as well. The righteous in the biblical world were people who devoted themselves to rooting their lives in grace and growing in faith and reaching in love. They were trying to do no harm and do all the good that they could and stay in love with God. And Jackie Robinson was clearly an icon of righteousness. And in the biblical world, the little ones who needed a cup of cold water, well, they were little ones who needed a cup of cold water. That's who they were. They're vulnerable and they're in need. And in 42, we see two of these little ones that are vulnerable. The first one that we see is this encounter, and it's a beautiful moment in the film, when Jackie Robinson is boarding a train to go off to play baseball, and he turns and he tosses a souvenir, a signed ball, to this little boy, a little African-American boy at the edge of that train, and he catches it. His name is actually Ed Charles, and he would go on to play for the Kansas City Athletics. He catches it, and then the train takes off, and he puts his ear down to the train track, and he looks out, and he declares, like with the most incredible enthusiasm, that he can still hear the train. He can still hear it. That's welcoming the little one right there. Then there's another moment in the vitriol of they're playing in Cincinnati, and there's a scene where Jackie Robinson takes the field. And there's a young white boy who's sitting next to his dad. And his dad starts to yell just horrid language, violent language at Jackie Robinson. And you see this little boy's face look up at his dad. And then you see the little boy repeat what his dad's saying. Except he does it with this painful look of shame kind of woven with hurt as he does it. But he keeps yelling. See, 42 takes us to something beyond words. It takes us to that place that we can't quite grab as the director of Pixar says, with words, and it speaks of that elusive nature of what it means to be human and to see one another as human. We see in this story and we witness what it means to welcome a prophet as a prophet, the righteous as the righteous, and a little one in need of a cup of cold water. We see Jackie Robinson and Branch Rickey both losing their lives for the sake of the gospel and Jesus, and were confronted with the truth that the reward for that kind of faithfulness is risky. It's dangerous. We see it throughout the film. And to be abundantly clear, the risk and the danger that's faced by Robinson and Rickey are not the same. They're not the same risks. Jackie Robinson was the one on the field who endured the threats and the taunts. He was held to that impossible double standard. Folks were over and over trying to inflict harm on him. He received countless death threats. And if he ever responded with anything but perfect restraint, it was his fault for the whole thing. And meanwhile, the violent assaults on his dignity went unnoticed, largely by the powers that be. So here's a scene in which Jackie Robinson, I think it's fair to say, just melts down. He's just seen too much, and he's had it. And he goes from the field inside into the dugout. So let's watch.
Son of a bitch that opens his mouth, I'll smash his goddamn teeth in.
You can't do that, Jack.
I'm supposed to just let this go on.
These men have to live with themselves.
I have to live with myself, too. Right now, I'm living a sermon out there.
You don't matter now, Jack. You're in this thing. You don't have a right to pull out from the backing of people that believe in you, that respect you, that need you.
Is that so?
If you fight, they won't say that Chapman forced you to. They'll say that you're in over your head, that you don't belong here.
Do you know what it's like having somebody do this to you?
No. No. You do. You're the one living the sermon in the wilderness. 40 days. All of it. Only you.
There's not a goddamn thing I can do about it.
Of course there is. You can get out there and hit. You can get on base and score. You can win this game for us. We need you. Everybody needs you. You're medicine, Jack.
That's one of his face down in the arena moments. And we worked on that together in a worship series at Easter. He's the one, he's in the wilderness. He's the one who's living the call that Jesus has placed on his life. And he's embodying righteousness as he just breaks down. This, for me, is the passion and the despair. It's the longing of what it looks like to allow your life to be shaped by God's longing for you to do justice and love kindness and walk humbly. This is Jackie Robinson figuring out what that means in his life and in his day. He'd go on later to say that a life is not important except in the impact it has on other lives. Amen. That's righteousness. It's a risky and dangerous way of living. It means losing your life for the sake of the gospel and Jesus, and that means living for others. That means living for others. At the end of his first season, Robinson would go on to be named Rookie of the Year. And then 2 years later, he would win the National League MVP. And then he would lead them to the Dodgers to 6 pennants in a World Series in his 10 seasons. Earlier this week, James Blake, African-American tennis player, released a new book, and he was on NPR, and I found the book, and he shares this about Jackie Robinson. He says, Jackie Robinson is perhaps the most historically significant baseball player ever, ranking with Babe Ruth in terms of his impact on the national pastime. Ruth may have changed the way baseball was played, but Jackie Robinson changed who Americans thought should play. A man of many firsts, Robinson was also the first black player to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Branch Rickey's journey to becoming a prophet was not like Jackie Robinson's at all. His full name was Wesley Branch Rickey. His parents named him after the founder of the Methodist movement, John Wesley, and then also this line from Isaiah. The line is, and there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. He too played Major League Baseball, kind of just below average, is how they say it. He actually befriended, all the way back in 1903, the man who would go on to become the first African American to play in the National Football League. And his name is Charles Follis. Rickey would go on to also coach Ohio Wesleyan University's baseball team. And there's a story that goes back as he's the coach, and his team is going to South Bend, and he's leading them to this new town in South Bend, and they pull in and they get to the hotel. The hotel's called the Oliver Hotel. And there's all kinds of stories about what really happened at the Oliver Hotel. You can see in Branch Rickey's style in this anyways, he leaves a lot of embellishment, is what I would say. He's a huge character, both in the film and in real life. And so one of the ways that the story goes is that as they go to check in, everybody is set, but then the person at the check place at the hotel says that Charlie Thomas can't come in. And he's the only African-American player on Ohio Wesleyan's baseball team. And one version of the story, has Branch Rickey telling one of his players to go down and find another hotel. Another version has him sending this young man up to his room and telling them to get a cot, and he's going to find a way for him to stay there. But all of the versions end with him going to his room and seeing this young man, Charlie Thomas, on the bed weeping. And this image was seared, we're told, in Branch Rickey's heart and mind. And some folks say that that's what shaped his prophetic stance on racial integration that drove him. And most historians say that's just all embellished. It's mostly all made up. And most would say that he was driven far more by profit than by justice, is actually what we're told. And 42 captures this tension powerfully. It leaves it unresolved, so we don't get to know what his motives really might have been, and maybe we never do. It holds that faithfully. And what I find, though, missing in 42 is any real glimpse into the life of the communities of faith that shaped these two faithful, powerful men. And I know it's Hollywood, and they can't do everything in these, and I really get that, and I respect that. And it feels to me like I wondered as I was watching this. I wondered about the folks that were seated next to them in the Methodist communities that they talk about over and over. Like, who were the folks that shaped them? And there's a number of biographies that invite us deeper into this. But the film misses in not allowing us to really see the godly play teachers of their day, or to really see the way they were meeting together in whatever their version of a kitchen table was in their respective and different Methodist church communities. We don't get to hear the prophetic messages from their pastors or from the people seated around them. And ultimately, Jesus and his disciples, the risk-taking that they call us to, the notion of losing our lives for the sake of the gospel by welcoming the prophet and the righteous and the little one, that is always found in community. It's never found on our own. And the film has an opportunity, or had an opportunity, to help us to see that. Jackie Robinson clearly gets it. In one of his notes, he was giving a sermon himself, and this is something that he shared. He said, well, my beloved friend Martin Luther King had a dream, and Jackie Robinson, he's talking in the third person, has a debt. And in his notes, he underlines that word debt. He says, I have a debt to young people who, black and white, wanted me to make it, to succeed. Back in those tough days when I was a beginner in baseball and when many people were not used to seeing a black face out there on the baseball field, I have a debt to Negro people who turned out to show their loyalty, not to me, but to the concept that if baseball was to be an all-American game, it had to include all Americans. And I wish the film could have captured that debt that he knew so deeply and so well. But it's also possible to just witness 42 as a piece of history, as a history lesson. And it seems to me that we don't even need to look beyond the walls of the church to know with abundant clarity that this story is real right now. Bishop Karen Olivito was elected about a year ago as the first openly gay bishop in the United Methodist Church. She's already been on trial, and she's received countless death threats as well. And today is Pastor Chris Logan's first day with us here at the table. He'll be here for this year as a church planting resident through a ministry called Path One. And we'll work together, Linda and Chris and myself, as a pastoral team to lead this phenomenal community of faith and listening for how God is calling us into the future. And then our hope is that we're going to send Chris a year from now to plant a new community of faith. And some of you might be taken off to join him in that. This is a first in other ways. It's true that in the 1960s, a man named Cecil Williams was appointed by his bishop to a little dying white church in San Francisco called Glide. It's also true that there was the first African American to be appointed here to start a brand new church, and it happened in the mid-1990s over in the Bay Area, and his name is Junius Dotson, and the church is called Genesis. So Chris is lined up around strong people who have gone before him. But it's pretty stunning and significant to just hold this truth. This church, Central United Methodist Church, was founded in 1850. We've told you that story thousands of times. And the founding pastor of this church, was sent from the Methodist Episcopal Church South to Sacramento. That was the Methodist denomination that resulted from the 19th century split over slavery. That's who came out here to start this space. And just as Jackie Robinson wasn't allowed in Major League Baseball, Pastor Chris wouldn't have been allowed to worship, much less lead, this community of faith just a few generations ago. And so we've come a distance, and we witness in both Pastor Chris and Bishop Karen that we have so far to go. So clearly the state of the United Methodist Church and Major League Baseball have a lot of parallels, and that's another sermon that we can work on together. But I want to close with this. When Larry King was interviewing Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, he introduced him as the founder of the American Civil Rights Movement. And Dr. King stopped him and corrected him. Dr. King said that the true founder of the movement was Jackie Robinson. So Jackie Robinson, like Dr. King, drew on the deep roots of his faith tradition. and the community that had helped him to rise strong, to find a place for African-American men in Major League Baseball. And so I wonder for some of us here today, what might it look like for you to rise strong and to take your place in this world and in this call that God has on your life? Branch Rickey drew on the deep roots of his faith tradition and his community to welcome Jackie Robinson. And for many of us here, what might this look like for us today? Like, who might God be calling you to welcome right now? The prophet, the righteous, the little one. May we all find our way in life that is indeed a ball game, and may our lives be ever rooted in grace as we come to this table where God seeks to welcome all. Amen.
Life is a ball game being played each day. Life is a ball game everybody can play. Yes, you know Jesus standing at the home plate. He's waiting for you there. You know life is a ball game, but you've got to play it fair. The first base is temptation. You know the second base is sin. The third base, tribulation. If you pass, you can make it in. Old man Solomon is the umpire, and Satan's pitching again. He'll do his best to strike you out. He's playing just the same.